Hey, we're in recess, so I'll just call us back to order now. We have reconvened our panel for Wednesday, September 11th, 2024, on Zoom.gov, and we will be hearing the next case that is scheduled for oral argument for us, and it is our only case on Zoom and our final oral case on this calendar. So, just for the counsel who were not in the courtroom earlier today, which I think is both of you. Right now, you are appearing in front of myself, presiding Judge Wheelock. Judge Reyes and Judge Sleater were the panel today. And just a reminder that our oral arguments are recorded by the court. The audio is generally available within about 24 hours on our website. And so please ensure that you speak clearly for our recording. I will have our marshal call this case formally now.
Now calling A240647, State of Minnesota versus Richard Dewan Dross.
Thank you. And counsel, as you both probably know, you'll each have 15 minutes for your argument with an additional 5 minutes of rebuttal. For appellant's counsel, there should be a clock in the upper right hand of your screen. Can you both see that?
I can, Your
Okay,
Honor.
great. Thank you. So that'll be where you can observe your time. When you're not speaking, please keep yourself muted. And the other thing we'd like you to do is introduce yourself and the name of your client so we know how to refer to each of you. And that'll be helpful. Let's see. I'm trying to think if there's any other housekeeping. I think that's pretty much it. With that, counsel for appellant, you may begin when you are ready. There are 15 minutes on the clock.
Your Honors, my name is John Olson. I'm representing the state of Minnesota in this matter. And in this case, we appeal the decision by the district court, a pretrial order. The key question in this case is whether the court, district court, abused its discretion when on April 15th, 2024, it issued a broad order barring the state from introducing any and all DNA evidence in this matter, including any evidence that could have been collected by the state after that date through other means, aside from a Rule 902 order. And in effect, we did obtain DNA by other means, aside from that Rule 902 order that was previously issued by the district court. Just by way of background,
Mr. Olson, can I ask you a question at that point? Did the district court's order, did you read that to exclude the DNA that had been previously matched, the DNA on the weapon, the BCA matched it with the Texas equivalent of the BCA, I assume, that tied it to Mr. Ross?
I understood it to exclude that. Now, typically the BCA won't testify to matching to databases. They always want a new known sample for any case, but we understood it to bar any DNA evidence. And I guess I've not aware of anyone viewing that order differently, just any and all DNA evidence.
But I assume the reason I asked is I wondered how you could you not present that evidence, presuming it didn't apply to any previously obtained evidence related to DNA. I understood the judge's order to be all related to the new buccal swab that was sought and the delay and so forth, but I didn't read it to have anything to do with that previous match to Texas. And so I wondered why you could not present that evidence, and how does that affect the critical impact analysis?
Well, if it did not apply that Texas sample, I think there would be critical impact because the BC won't allow it. They won't go through with it. They won't, I think, testify to that. So the only way we could present DNA evidence at trial were to be a new known sample taken here in connection with this case.
But couldn't you present the evidence? I think I understand what you're saying is that obviously they don't have personal knowledge from their own analysis, but Isn't there a way to present that evidence, whether you need someone from Texas or maybe a technician who can explain the match system and how it works and how reliable it is or not, and maybe there'd be some pretrial issues related to it. But it just struck me that that would be useful evidence to the state and might affect the critical impact analysis.
I don't know of any way we could do it. I guess it's never been tried. I don't know whether we could, it's even possible to do that. That Texas, say, I just don't know of a way we could get that presented in court. And that's why we proceed as if the only way we would have DNA evidence is available is a new known sample. I don't know logistically whether it's possible.
Mr. Olson, I have a related question. You mentioned several times in your brief that the district court order excluded any and all DNA evidence. Where is that in the district court order? Is that just the way you read the order, or is there a specific language in there?
Probably it is the way we read the order, but when I read the order, page two, defendant's motion to preclude the state from the use of DNA evidence that they failed to collect is granted. Nothing, I guess, when we read it, permits use of any DNA evidence. And had we known we could, had we read it that we could introduce newly collected DNA sample evidence, we wouldn't have bothered with this appeal. That's certainly the way we read it, but I guess I didn't know it was to be read another way. When we looked at it in the office, we all understood it barred any use of DNA evidence.
Counsel, could you please address critical impact? It seems that you have to have some pretty strong evidence supporting that, but certainly there was plenty of other evidence that the state had that it could rely on. You only have to show joint possession. So please address that.
I can, Your Honor. There were four people in the car. There's always going to be plus some plausibility, deniability when it's not on an individual's person that they didn't know that firearm was there. Plus the fact that there's so many people in the other elsewhere in a car creates at least some doubt. When I read the critical impact threshold, it just says, reduces the likely significantly reduces the likelihood of conviction. And here we have four people in a car, a firearm found near Ross but not on his person, and DNA now with his DNA evidence showing his DNA is on the firearm substantially increases the likelihood we can obtain a conviction. It is just not a very strong a case without that. That's really the key to the evidence that ties that gun to Ross versus anyone else in the car. And I guess that's the only way we see it. I did want to get to, by way of background, when this case first came in, though, the BCA, and when we have evidence collected in any case, it is sent to the Minnesota BCA lab in Bemidji occasionally, and I don't control their forensic protocol nor whatever. Asked to do so. Sometimes it's sent to the St. Paul lab for further testing where they just don't have the scientists in both locations. But when this case came in, the DNA turnaround was roughly about 6 months. And usually then we would get a report saying, okay, there's a major profile, multiple major profiles in this case. When this case came about, though, that substantially increased. So we kept getting, we thought we would have that probably then in the summer of 2022. And you can see through the transcripts, we just waiting, 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 both sides very frustrated. And then we called and we kept getting told, no, it's just going to have to wait, going to have to wait. And even then, in the, I think, winter, early spring of 2023, we were notified by the BCA, and that's in the transcript, that they were still at that point testing cases that were over a year old.
Those were
And
to
there's.
test the DNA that was found on the firearm, though, correct? That wasn't about obtaining a sample from a respondent here.
That wasn't, Your Honor. And so,
Is
probably
there
if
a
I'd
reason
known.
why, Rule 9 motion wasn't pursued earlier? Is there a reason why there was a decision made to not obtain a search warrant to obtain the sample?
So I can answer that. If I could do it in hindsight, we would have did the search warrant right away, and I can get into multiple reasons. What we did is we just thought at the time, let's just wait to see if there's anything to do analysis from. We had protests from a defense counsel before saying we need to wait till there's at least some known sample on the firearm testable material before we can make a defendant get a sample. And then when we thought it was only going to be about 6 months, we thought it'd be easier to just wait. Had I known it would be a year and a half, I wouldn't have done that waiting. The other problem is we proceeded with the 902 motion, doing what many counties did, and we found it preferable to bring it before the court. That way the defense counsel can be involved, everyone, it can all be done just
So
with
my concern
everyone's.
is that the state had, 2 years and some months to collect the sample, and they did not take the steps necessary to actually obtain it in that time. And so my concern, just going back again to the critical impact, is how can you show that the exclusion of evidence you didn't have reduces the likelihood of a prosecution? I think there's a logical concern here that I have.
No, I understand. And we didn't have it maybe in July, the critical impact, but it's certainly true now. And it's available in the court record that we did have DNA now that matches the Ross to the firearm.
Right, but we're
That
looking at the district court order, right? We're looking at whether or not the district court erred based on the information it had at that time.
well, we knew at the time the district court did have before the court that A, it did match the firearm genetic material on the firearm matched Ross based on a Texas database. So we knew any new sample was almost certainly going to match the defendant, Richard Ross. And so we really did know that at the time. And that's in the record that the court knew it was going to be a match.
What was the timing of that? Are you talking about in July of 2023 when there was the match from the National DNA Index System from Texas? Is that what you're talking about?
That is, and it was made known to the court that it matched a firearm, or the sorry, the Texas database. Then in January and through March, when we started quabbling over the sanctions motions, there was some talk about resolution, talk about Mr. Ross wanting a new attorney. I think we highlighted that issue, that it's certainly going to show a match at the time, and that was all before the court issued its order. Unfortunately, because we didn't have a sample, we didn't get that final confirmatory bit that it was a new known sample was going to be a match, but I think everything pointed to that was going to be the case, and it did turn out to be the case. And so the one thing I did want to stress is, in hindsight, we would have probably went through a search warrant right away, but that wasn't because of anything that happened in this case. It was kind of, we got a surprise package a month ago that this court in State versus Steeprock also said a 902 order is technically an illegal search because it's not a warrant based on probable cause. And so depending on when this would have went to trial and if motions were filed, we could have had to it might have had problems there too, but the new sample we obtained was through a search warrant. The big thing that we're our argument is based on, though, is if this was a violation of discovery rules or a discovery order, there would have to be a delayed disclosure. And in this case, we didn't fail to turn over anything that we had. It was just an investigative delay. And two, I don't think the order, the November 9th order that mandated Ross can be construed as a mandate on the state that we had to obtain a sample. It was really a mandate on Ross with strings that say, yeah, he has to turn it over, but we only have until this date to collect it because the court didn't, of course, want things delayed forever. And so I don't think it can be construed that we violated an order that required us to take an action because I know of no authority that requires. Allows a district court to tell the state, the prosecutors, or law enforcement that we have to do certain genetic testing, we have to interview certain witnesses.
I don't think they were telling you that you had to do that genetic testing. Rather, they were saying if you chose to do so, you needed to do so within such and such a time frame. And it seems to me that that's within the discretion of the trial court and how it manages the case.
No, and I understand and I don't disagree with the court on that. But then what we were going to do is if the court did not allow, and it would have been within its discretion not to grant any extension of the 902 order, and we told the court we're just going to then go to the search warrant process. And really, that's what we did. And then the court still kind of barred us anyway, in our interpretation of the April 15th order, barred our use of that DNA evidence anyway. And that's why, I don't think we directly violated that order. We just didn't take available because of it. The investigator was set to go down to the cities to get it, was tied up in trial that day, and that was not foreseen. And that's what happened. And then we were going to try and get an extension of that. And then I think we were just left with no quite choice at the end but to do the search warrant option. And that's really what happened here. But the bigger trouble is in our cases, especially State versus Lindsay, really focuses on prejudice to the defendant when we grant that harsh remedy of exclusion. And in this case, Ross has never showed, nor did the district court really identify any serious prejudice. All he had, in fact, most of the time this case was pending, it was Ross, not the state, who said the DNA is important. We want to wait. We want to wait. And even in April, the trial date that the court was unhappy about the continuance, that was done at Ross's request. Ross's attorney, even at the district court, always acknowledged, I think in January, he could have made a speedy trial request to push things along. And in that case, we would have been forced to go to trial whether they had that evidence or not. And they never did so. They chose to wait. And now they're kind of
The
complaining
state
about.
also chose to wait. And I guess, I'm thinking back to the December order, the order, I guess it was a November 9th order, actually, that said that the sample needed to be collected by December 1st. Ultimately, it sounds like the state did obtain a search warrant to get the sample. It seems that the state could have done that at any point in time during these proceedings, and it chose not to.
And that is true, Your Honor. And we definitely regret not just if we could do this over again back in January 2022, we would have had those warrants done then if we could have predicted. We just didn't realize the delays by the BCA were going to happen. We just didn't think it was going to take so long, and then the issues would have been that big. If we'd known the BCA was going to take a year and a half, we would have did it right away. And if we known that State versus Steep Rock issue would have came out, we would have just did the warrant right away. And I regret not doing so. But I don't think that creates prejudice to Ross in his ability to defend himself at trial. The only thing he really has is maybe to make a few extra hearings by Zoom that really are of a minor inconvenience. And even when the court does grant exclusion, the court was always under State versus Lindsay required to analyze whether continuance is possible. In this case, the court did grant a continuance, and then
And Mr.
only.
Olson, there will be 5 minutes for rebuttal. So
Oh,
I
I'm
see the
sorry.
time has elapsed, and I think we'll go ahead and turn over to counsel for a respondent now, Mr. Erickson. So if Mr. Olson can mute, Mr. Erickson can unmute. There are 15 minutes on the clock, and respondents, counsel, you may proceed when you are ready.
Good morning, Your Honor. Thank you, and may it please the court. My name is Anders Erickson, and I represent the respondent, Rashard Ross. We are requesting that this court dismiss the state's appeal because the state has not met its burden of establishing critical impact. Specifically, because the state did not obtain a DNA sample or obtain a DNA report prior to the district court issuing its order in April of 2024, there is simply no way for this court to conclude that the absence of the non-existent evidence will have a critical impact on the state's ability to prosecute its case.
Counsel, if you
Without the
could start with that point and address the fact that in the re I guess I'm not sure exactly where in the record is, but my understanding is that it was known that there was, in fact, a Texas database that had a hit. And so don't we actually know that the DNA evidence would have been matched?
No, Your Honor, that is not the DNA test or does not include a report with it that would have been used in this trial. That would have been inadmissible evidence. And that's clearly why the state was trying to get new DNA evidence to do a new test because the BCA, that is not admissible evidence. So while there could have been a test for a hit based on a prior conviction in Texas, that is not the evidence that we're talking about in this
It may
case. And
not
the
be admissible, but is it something that we should be considering when we examine the critical impact?
No, Your Honor, because it's not the evidence that one the court is precluding. This order that the court issued is stating that because the state did not obtain the DNA evidence before December 1st, that is the violation of the order. If between December 1st and April of 2024, the state would have made any effort to get this DNA sample, which it did not do, which is still unexplained why the state did not do it at any point during that 4-month period, and presented to that to the court and said, Judge, we have this new sample. It's been tested. We have a report that's admissible evidence. We want to introduce that. And the court said no. Then the state could appeal from that order. Then the defense, I would have that order. I could look at it. I could challenge whether that DNA actually does connect him to the gun, and we could have that discussion. But we don't have that DNA evidence, and we don't have a report. So there's no way for this court to consider whether or not it would have a critical impact on the state's case. So that's just not before this court. It's not evidence that anybody in this room or virtual room can look at. So we don't know how it, what kind of impact it would have on Mr. Ross's trial. And again, there's just no explanation for why, you know, that the state discusses why it didn't get the evidence on November 30th, but it had from October 30th to December 1st. And personally, when I receive a court order telling me to do something, I do it. I don't wait a month and then not tell the court after that deadline that I didn't do it, right? It wasn't until January of 2024 at the hearing when the state for the first time told the judge, oh, we didn't get this sample that you ordered us to get, and still didn't do it in March of 2024 and still didn't do it in April of 2024. And it has not been explained.
Mr. Erickson, I think actually, I'm sure Appellant will address this, but I think they did explain it in their brief. But I want to go back to the critical impact issue, because our standard is whether or not the significant likelihood of reducing the state's successful prosecution of the case. And that rule is, from case law, is prospective. And I'm a little concerned that your argument that it should be precluded because the state didn't have evidence, if we were to adopt your rule, that could apply at any time when the state is trying to obtain DNA evidence. So in other words, I could foresee a defendant saying, you know, the state's trying to get a sample from the BCA, but it could take anywhere from 6 months a year. But a defendant saying, well, you know, we want to exclude that even before they obtained it. It almost seems like a circular argument. How can you argue that it should be excluded when it hasn't been obtained yet, and yet argue that it should be excluded because they have not obtained the sample?
Yeah, so let me try to explain that again. So if the court suppresses evidence or states that the state cannot introduce evidence, we know what that evidence is, right? In most suppression cases, when there's a gun found, a statement, drugs, any of those things, we have tangible evidence. And we can look at that evidence and we can say the lack of this evidence will have a critical impact on the case. Here, we don't have that evidence. It doesn't exist. And the idea, I understand what you're saying, that if it's a prospective order, but I've never seen a case like this. I've never seen the state fail to comply with the order. Existed, right? It wasn't the state or the defense's motion to say the state can't introduce this evidence. It was the state's motion asking for continuance after continuance after continuance. Well, and the judge acting within its.
Right. Let me stop you there, because I mean, the record is actually replete that Ross did ask for continuations both before and after the December deadline. So it wasn't just the state, both parties were, and Ross did concede to continuances because he did want to find out whether or not there was a DNA match found. So, and then even after December in 2023 or 2024, Ross did continue to ask for continuances as well, that the discourse granted, the last one granted reluctantly, but nevertheless did. So there seemed to be continuances, and I think that actually goes to the prejudice issue as well, but focusing on critical impact, I agree with you. I'm not aware of any cases in which a district court really prospectively prevents the state from introducing evidence that it is seeking to obtain but has not yet obtained. And I'm concerned that this, if we were to affirm on that issue, that a defendant could seek to exclude evidence that the state is trying to obtain but has not yet obtained.
Let me respond to, there's a few questions there. First, I want to talk about the continuance and that aspect of it. The state had the burden or was responsible for obtaining this evidence. Mr. Ross all along agreed to give his sample. This idea that they needed a warrant or any of that, it's a red herring in this case. Mr. Ross voluntarily went to Hubbard County, gave a DNA sample. The state screwed that up. They didn't document that the right way. Then Mr. Ross said, I will give you another sample. And the judge ordered the state to go to Hennepin County, to go to Minneapolis, where Mr. Ross lived, and obtain that sample. And the state never did it. So this idea that has something to do with a warrant doesn't make sense to me. Second, the continuance request, at the end of November, Mr. Ross moved for the court to dismiss the charges because they hadn't obtained the evidence. The judge then gave them to December 1st to obtain the evidence. The state did not do it. Then the state never went and got the DNA evidence. The continuances that the defense requested weren't to allow the state to go get their evidence. They had already moved the court to dismiss the charges and also to preclude the evidence. The continuances later on regarding Mr. Ross wanting to get a new attorney and all of that has nothing to do with one critical impact, because it has nothing to do with the state not doing their due diligence to go and get the DNA evidence, which the court ordered them to do. And then two, the prejudice that he suffered was because of the extensive delay in not getting this evidence, waiting and waiting and waiting, and then not being able to know what would that evidence say, how can I prepare for trial, how can I possibly decide whether to plead guilty, what does this evidence say, how am I gonna analyze it? So I think the continuances that Mr. Ross requested are very different than what the state was doing when there was a court order to get that DNA evidence by December 1st, and the court didn't do it. As far as your concerns about prospective motions for the state not to be able to get evidence. In a case like that, again, the critical impact is we don't have an order right now, or we don't have the DNA right now to look at. If in a future, so if this court agrees with us that there isn't critical impact, then this court can send it back. And if the state wants to file a motion to then introduce that evidence and the state and the court denies it, then we can come back and have that conversation. And that would happen in any other case where the state doesn't have the evidence and the motion is the state shouldn't be able to introduce this evidence in the future. Is as soon as they get that evidence and we know what it is, then we can have that discussion regarding critical impact, but we don't have that evidence.
Mr. Erickson, I want to get to the second part of it, because let's just assume for the sake of argument that the state has met its burden to show critical impact. I, in terms of the district court order, I, you know, speaking only for myself, I have some significant concerns, because it's a very brief 2-page order, but the district court doesn't cite any authority for its decision. It doesn't state, and the first thing we need to look at is determine what the discovery rule that was violated here. But the district court first doesn't list what the basis is for the discovery violation. And then further, it cites no case law or statute or rule as to, you know, the reasons for it, much less refer to the Lindsay factors, the four Lindsay factors in its analysis. Given the fact that there is so little here and no legal support for the district court's determination, why shouldn't we reverse this and remand this back to the district court to do a more thorough legal analysis so that we can do an appropriate appellate review?
A couple of responses. First, this is a de novo review as far as the legal arguments are concerned. So nothing would change regarding the law. We all understand that district court judges have extremely great amount of discretion with discovery, with moving trials along, with moving cases along. And in this case, the charge had been before this judge for almost 2 years. The judge gave the state the ability to do what it needed to do, and it failed to comply with the order. Rule 901, subdivision 2-3 gives district courts the authority and the discretion to order the state to disclose evidence. If the state wanted to get this evidence in at trial, it needed to disclose it by December 1st, and it didn't do it. There doesn't need to be a case law stating that. We all know that Rule 9 gives district courts discretion, and they need to have that discretion, or else this case would keep going for as long as possible without the state actually going and get this evidence. I don't know what other consequence would have got the state to do what it was supposed to do in this case, when the idea of possible dismissal or suppression of the evidence didn't get them to do it. They still didn't do it after December 1st. They didn't do it in January. They didn't do it in February. They didn't do it in March, and they didn't do it in April. That the district courts have to have the discretion to set guidelines. They're the gatekeepers of evidence. We can't have cases going on forever with the state. And this wasn't even the DNA, the BCA part of it. This is just getting a swab from Mr. Ross. That's it. That's all the state had to do.
Right. I'm putting aside the merits for now. I'm concerned that we typically do give district courts discretion, but that discretion is not unfettered. There has to be a record that is supported, a decision that is supported by the record, that there have to be findings of fact that we can review for clear error. There has to be a standard. To the extent that it is de novo review, we have to know what legal standard they are applying before we can determine whether or not they erred or not. And it's just completely absent here. And I don't, we're an error correcting court. We don't make those determinations in the first instance. We don't make those findings in the first instance. So why shouldn't this be remanded back to the district court?
Because the page 2 of the order, April 15th, 2024 order, include factual findings. I don't know how much more detail the court needs to go in when it's very clear that the court issued an order creating a deadline on December 1st of 2023 and the state didn't comply with it. That is the violation. If you're looking for an historical fact to point to, that's it. And that is not a clearly erroneous factual finding. That's what happened. And well, we know from the record.
But looking at the Lindsay factors, we don't have a discussion of the reasons why the disclosure was not made. We don't have an analysis of the extent of the prejudice to the opposing parties, the feasibility of rectifying the prejudice by continuance, and any other analysis of any other relevant factors that the district court considered. There's no discussion of that, and I'm just concerned that we can't do that on appeal.
Your Honor, I would just state again, the record is extremely clear. And to give the state the benefit of the doubt when there's no argument on the other side that there was any justifiable reason for this. The state in January said, oh, the reason why we didn't abide by the December 1st order is we had a conflict on November 30th. Well, the judge ordered them to do this in October. I don't know why they waited to the last second and then that would justify it. And then why didn't they do it December 2nd or 3rd or 4th or any other time in December or January or February or March? There's no argument on the other side that the district court abused its discretion by not listing off all the things the state did wrong when the record is clear, this order is clear.
Are we allowed to consider when assessing critical impact or determining whether the district court erred in its sanction, are we allowed to consider the fact that the state had been on notice that the relief sought was in fact dismissal or suppression? Are we allowed to take that into account in our analysis?
If you could clarify. So for critical impact, we have to look at what the evidence is that's not coming in. And we look at that evidence and we say, would that have a critical impact on the trial? The fact that they knew the sanction was possible, I think that goes to the merits of it more than the critical impact, because the critical impact is just, what is the evidence suppressed? Nobody has that evidence on appeal right now. It doesn't exist. So we look at that non-existing evidence and we say, what impact did that have? Would that have on a trial? We can't do that. The state obviously knew what the possible sanctions were. And I think that goes to the Lindsay factors and goes to the merits of why they didn't comply with it. This wasn't a motion that the defense filed in February. This was an order saying you need to do this by December 1st, and the state never did it. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Well, we'll see.
We'll find out.
We are out of time for you, Mr. Erickson, and we will now turn back to Mr. Olson, counsel for the appellant. There are 5 minutes on the clock, and Mr. Olson, you may begin when you are ready.
Your Honors, I just have a few brief responses. And we did address this in the brief, but I think it's very clear why we did not, after December 1st, right away go get a new sample. And the real reason was we already had it before the court going the 902 out route. And we told the court when it came back before the court on January 22nd, we did not go get a sample right away afterwards because under the order, Ross was not required to provide a sample after December 1st. And so it didn't make sense to send an investigator here from Park Rapids, Hubbard County to the Twin
Cities.
That
being the case, when did you make your application for the search warrant?
The application was made in connection with a separate case by a BCA agent, and that was done around April. It might have been done the very same, I don't have it right before me, the same day that the exclusion order came out. And we do have a BCA lab report that's filed as document number 90. It was issued on May 22nd, 2024. That is the report that would come into trial showing a direct match based on that known sample to Ross. And back to the point of why did we delay, we were going to first go that route. And then it was like, we can't wait any longer for the court. We're going to have to go the search warrant route. And then we learned there was a separate investigation. And even the court kind of said when in a later hearing, it was a fair inference that Ross, we didn't have the authority under that old order to obtain a sample. And that's why we didn't do it. And then we were trying to get it back on January 22nd. We asked for more time. We asked the court to give us an extension. And then when we knew it was a separate case, we told the court finally, I think it was March or April, we're just going to have to go the search warrant route if the court won't grant us this. And then we learned of the separate investigation and we just said, okay, we don't want to wait any longer. Let's just use that sample they're obtaining. And that did get sent to the BCA, and the BCA did analyze that, and that was issued, that report, I think, around March 22nd. That's document number 90. The other thing is, we could have waited till that report came out and brought it back before the district court. And the problem was, is this order was issued in April, and we were concerned if we waited, we would have forfeited our right to a pretrial appeal of the April order. And it didn't really, it wasn't maybe desirable to go that route. But if we asked for reconsideration based on new facts, we lost all right to appeal that April 15th order. And that's why we just had to also then proceed with an appeal, direct appeal of that order. And that's why we did what we did. And unless the court has further questions, I don't have any further rebuttal.
Okay, seeing no questions, I think that means that this concludes the argument then on this case. Judge Reyes?
Yes, actually, I do have one question for the state. Mr. Olson, the state was put on notice in late 2023 that the defendant would either seek to have the complaint dismissed outright or to have the DNA evidence excluded because of its failure to comply with the district court order and the ongoing delays. Why aren't those appropriate requests for relief? I mean, what other requests could Ross have made?
He could have, and he conceded he could have made a speedy trial request that would have forced us to either go to trial without the evidence or get it in time. And he acknowledged around that time, I think in January 22nd, he could have done that. He could have all the time requested a speedy trial. The court would have been required to set it then typically within that 60 days, and we're left with the only options. And we do have that happen. We have where we have to get the evidence in time and pull all the stops. And the BCA, if there is a speedy trial request, the BCA will speed up their testing. We just never got that. And that's why it took so long.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Olson, and thank you, Mr. Erickson. The briefing in this case has been helpful. Oral argument has been helpful as well. The court will take this matter under advisement and issue an opinion within the statutory timeframe. And that ends the oral portion of this morning's calendar. The court is now in recess. Thank you.
Thank you.